Life's a game. The world's a stage, and we are merely role players where theatrical people play role-playing games. I'm Matt Boothman, and I'm your compere for this Main House production. Here on Merely Role Players, we improvise stories to entertain you and to entertain ourselves. And we use role-playing games to keep the story going places even we can't see coming, because we're theatrical people. We're all about maximising the drama. This episode is part of our current Main House production, Vigil, Tailor-Made. To tell this story, we're playing Monster of the Week, a role-playing game by Michael Sands, published by Evil Hat. So please take your seats in the Main House. Tonight's production is about to begin. Vigil. A Merely Role Players Main House production. Tailor-Made, Act 4 of 5.
I'm Josh, and I play Ginny Greenteeth, the Spell Slinger. In the Dark Ages, soothsayer Ginny was chased from her village under suspicion of witchcraft. Now, many centuries later, she is the proud owner of a local tourist attraction and gift shop in Sheridan.
My name's Chris McLennan, and I'm playing Ed Kincaid, the professional. He's a disgraced MI5 agent who's been kicked down to a basement to investigate reports of ghosts and little green men and other things that definitely don't exist. He just wants to file his report and go home.
I'm Chris Buxey, and I play Calisterius Softbinding, the expert. Calisterius, or Cal to his friends, is a noted horror writer living in Cherrydale. While researching his latest novel, he discovered that monsters were real. He also discovered that fighting monsters is an excellent way to procrastinate when he really should be writing.
I'm Ellie, and I play Peggy Taylor, the Crooked. She's travelled the world for the last 20 years, running impressive cons with her grifter network. The last job, though, it went bad. Real bad. And she's come home to lie low.
My family home has become unrecognisable.
There is a worm woven through the walls of this house. Carved rosebriar treasure chest, might still be in attic, do not open.
We have to get all of the innocents out of here before we deal with the worm.
Cal, the smoke alarm drops off the ceiling, bringing with it a tangle of those tapewormy, green, ribbony segments of worm body. Right next to you, tangling round one of your legs, and then the smoke alarm starts to retract back up to the ceiling, lifting you upside down off the floor, dragging you towards the ceiling to a position where it's trying to effectively, like, drag you through a very small hole in the ceiling.
I don't want to go up into the attic.
I think Ed would immediately be blasting the tendrils.
Great. Peggy, this is your house. It doesn't belong to this thing. Your family brought this thing here. You're the boss. And you show it who's boss as you shove this mop end.
Right up in it.
Right up in it. Cal doesn't help at all.
Yeah, that's clear.
But balancing on these buckets and with the mop, you're able to poke at the trapdoor, and it resists in the same way as all of the doors have been resisting. It doesn't want you to open it. You can wedge the mop end just enough under it, and it's one of these mop ends that has a little plastic hook on it. The trapdoor cracks open just the tiniest bit enough to let that end of the mop through, and it is clamping shut, trying to stay shut. Like, the mop is wedged in it because of Cal being pulled up into the ceiling while he was trying to help. Cal kicks the bucket out from underneath you.
Brilliant.
And you're now dangling from a mop which is wedged into the attic trapdoor.
Yeah, perfect.
As Ed starts to blast at tendrils.
It's immediate.
Immediate blasting. So
it's, kick some ass.
I'm an act under pressure. That's not hugely high. That's 7.
You can deal your damage to it, yes, but you're going to get tangled up in these tendrils as well.
Yeah, all right.
I think basically the two of you were standing close enough to each other that as the smoke alarm dropped, the tendrils grabbed Cal. They grabbed you at the same time, Kincaid. It's just that you start blasting with the pistol and you do some damage. You do hit some of these tendrils, but it's not enough to stop yourself getting tangled up as well.
He looks at the segmented tapeworm tendrils as he's dragged up and goes, yeah. I thought you said it was worm with a Y!
And you're actually tangled much more tightly. It's got Cal round a leg and he's hanging upside down. Kincaid, it's got you round the throat and chest. It begins to constrict. You take 2 harm. You're being strangled around the throat and chest, and after you get a couple of shots that hit home, spraying Ginny with worm blood, it gets a coil around your arm and sort of pulls your arm so that your pistol isn't aiming at the coils anymore. And both of you are being pulled up into the ceiling towards this small hole. Ginny, you're the only one who's free at this point.
It's not in imminent peril.
And as all of this is happening, you also start to hear from a couple of floors down pounding as if on the front door and yells up from the 3 that you've freed from these flats going, we need some help down here.
Oh, blimey. Now, there's currently no, like, out-of-control fire, right?
That's right. I mean, Cal's sword is sort of waving about a bit as
a fiery pendulum.
You know, it would be out of control if he drops it and it sticks in the floorboards.
Mm. Okay, so I could throw a fireball up there, up into the roof, to hopefully get it to drop you guys. But I'd have to roll pretty well, which is not always a guarantee.
Well, yeah, so you'd set them both on fire.
Yeah.
I've enough D&D to know that I don't like the hostage rescue plan of fireball for the room.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. That's not Ginny at all. Wait, do you need help here, or shall I go downstairs and help them? I can't think. Try shooting it again. I can't. I'm just going to try and grab their leg. Ginny is genuinely like worried and stressed at the moment. Is going to try and grab the lad's legs and just try and pull.
Peggy's going to roll her eyes and pull a handgun out of her back pocket. She's going to try and do what Ed did and just shoot at the weird green tendril stuff.
Amazing. Okay, while dangling from this mop handle one hand.
Yeah.
That's some action hero
it's
stuff.
It's also a robust hook on this mop.
Well, seriously. The trapdoor's holding it very hard.
Yeah, it's clamped.
Great, roll kick some ass.
Well, I've rolled a 7 and I've got a +1, so that's 8.
Great, okay. You deal your harm, it deals its harm. Peggy pulls a handgun from her back pocket. What sort of... We're English and we don't know guns, but do you want to give any description of the gun?
I think when we talked about it before, it's quite compact. Mm. Yeah. Like, it's small, discreet, black, serial numbers filed off.
Yeah, this is a black market piece.
Yeah, and it's lightweight and easy to conceal.
And is Peggy like a dead-eye shot? Like, are you sort of... like drawing a careful bead on these things and snapping shots off, or are you blazing wildly?
The careful one. She takes her gun work seriously.
So we're seeing incredible composure from Peggy at this point, like dangling off this mop, frustrated, nothing's gone right. You hardly even know these people, and yet you're able to keep your head, and shots ring out and slam home and spatter all the rest of you with even more green blood. What you don't notice as you're drawing this dead-eye bead on the stuff spilling out of the smoke alarm hole is a green miasma creeping out through the narrow gap of the trapdoor being held open. And this cloud begins to drift downwards through the landing and over you. You breathe a little in and it tears your throat like acid.
Oh, no.
You're going to take... 4 harm.
Oh, you're okay.
Oh my god.
I'm going to give you a choice here. You didn't see this coming. You're choking. Your throat is on fire. You're going to lose your grip on something.
Mm.
So either you drop the gun or you let go of the mop handle and fall back down into the landing. You won't take harm from that. It'll just be hard to get back up into the attic again. What's your priority? Keeping the weapon or keeping your route up into the attic?
I think it's keeping my route up into the attic.
Is the fog cloud still surrounding her, or is it?
It's pouring out of the trapdoor.
Okay.
But I think I'm like, it's now or never. I either go into the attic now and try and get what I need, or I'm going to never get back into the attic again, because the only option could be setting this house on fire.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, you help these guys out as much as you can, you fire off your shots, but when push comes to shove, the gun's going and you're heading up into that attic.
So, sorry, can I just get my head around it? So these guys are being strangled and dangled.
Yes.
Yeah. Peggy is being choked and is going to be going choked, up the attic.
But also shinning up that mop pole to the attic.
Yeah, for sure. And the innocents are downstairs trying to get out of their flats.
Yes. And you've still got... Dennis is still in his flat.
Oh, well.
And who, yeah. And whoever... Wendy was the name you were given of the person in the ground floor flat.
Matt, what you've given me is like a three-way trolley dilemma. Okay, let's help the two boys out. I'm just gonna throw as much fire up into that attic void space as I can do to try and hit the base of where the wormy tentacles are coming from,
great,
in the hope that they react and drop the lance, and then as a group we can move on.
Roll kick some ass with plus weird, please.
Yep, standing underneath the boys, point up to the ceiling. My hand becomes inflamed, and I fire up a fire missile.
All of Jenny's magic before the fire had, like, you had to take components out of your apron and, like, scatter herbs around and things like that.
Mm.
Does the fire magic that you've unlocked in yourself not require that?
I think it still requires components, but I think it's components... I think it's ash from those that I have defeated up to this point.
Ash from the feathers of Max Dashwood's ascended form.
Yes, and from the burnt embers of his office from when we fought in the last game, which I crush in my hand to a fine powder and release. And that channels the rage and the aggression of the fire.
Give us a roll.
Yes, first I'd like to use one of my little tokens of fortunes to give me a plus one going forward. So I'm rolling kicks on my ass using magic. So this plus four, which gives me a 14.
Woo! Amazing. You trade blows, you trade harm, but you get extra options because you've rolled so well.
I would like to gain the advantage, and I would like to give a plus one forward to another hunter, that hunter being Peggy.
Nice.
Many thanks.
Who is well impressed by the fiery potential of this silly old woman.
Well, I think how you give her that advantage is you fireball the ceiling and the trapdoor releases. Or the, you know...
Like it's distracted
just,
it enough.
Peggy has just got... You've shinned up the mop and you've got a hand on the edge of the lip of the trapdoor and you're just starting to push against it as Ginny fires off this fireball... And it just opens. It's not being held shut. However, you fling this missile of flame up at the ceiling. The coils, the ribbony tendrils of the worm blacken under the flame. And you also widen the hole that they're coming down through, creating potentially another way into the attic.
Okay.
But at the same time, sort of in reaction or in anticipation that comes slightly too late... The walls of the landing start to close in at speed. And Peggy isn't paying too much attention to what's going on below her, but Peggy would be the one to realise that the only walls that are moving are the ones that have been added. So the original walls of the house are staying where they are, but all of the partitions that have been added to subdivide it into flats are being shoved around by the worm's body inside them. You're slammed and crushed against the banisters by this moving wall. In fact, because it's sort of closing the whole of the... It's only that they're dangling that saves Cal and Kincaid from being hurt by this as well. Because you're at ground level, Ginny, you're slammed against the banisters for three harm.
Ooh, crikey.
And the wall stays where it is, pinning you in place. You can see in the way that these coils are moving and the sort of the amount of blood being scattered everywhere... In fact, you can see all of the walls are becoming slick with worm interior fluids as the, even though you're only attacking portions of it, the damage does seem to be stacking up and it seems to be hurting throughout the house.
Interesting. Do the gentlemen get dropped?
Yes, I think they do get dropped, yes.
Cool.
This landing is basically non-existent now. Like, the two flats have got bigger, and the landing has got... it's only as wide as Ginny's body is holding it away from the banister. So you two, I think, probably drop from the coils and land either on the stairs or sort of balancing on the banister. Cal, you are upside down, so probably on the stairs for you.
Okay, no problem.
We need to find its weakness, Cal.
I couldn't agree more.
The painted over door or the cellar. It's got to be in there.
Great thinking. Where was the painted over door?
The painted over door is on the next floor down, the same floor as the Airbnb and Dennis's flat.
I agree with Ginny's assessment. I am going to run down those stairs and try to open the door that's painted shut.
Okay. Meanwhile, Peggy pulls herself up into the attic. The attic is hazy with this green fog. Do you do anything to stop yourself breathing more of it in?
Yeah, I think I take my jacket off and wrap it around my face.
You can feel that you are limiting it, but partly because you're in this environment, partly because you're unstable, mm-hmm. you won't be able to stay up here for long without it hurting you more.
Yeah.
What's your priority? Because there are two things up here that you're looking for.
The thing I've left behind is my priority.
Okay, you know exactly where you put it.
Does everything still look as it did before?
Last time you were in the tailor's attic, it was cluttered.
Mm.
This was where they stored a lot of their stuff.
Yeah.
Especially the stuff they would want to keep out of, away from prying eyes.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, this was a treasure hoard.
Mm.
Probably as a child, you maybe loved coming up here
mm.
and sort of playing among all of the strange fey artifacts and treasure chests and all sorts of bits and pieces.
Yeah.
It's bare now. Everything's been mm-hmm. taken away. Apart from these last couple of bits.
Right, well, I don't have to go far to the hiding place because it's very simply underneath where the hatch flaps open.
Ah,
so a place that no one would ever look when they're in the attic.
Well, it's good. It means you don't have to go far from the hatch to get this.
Yep.
You can also, by the way, the other thing that's different is there's a hole in the attic floor.
It's just been blown open.
A smoking hole.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
which is helping with the fog. Some of it is being drawn away.
Excellent.
Well, it also means if it decides to shut the hatch, then you can still get down.
Yeah.
So I'm going to look in the hiding place mm-hmm. Under the opened hatch yeah. and under some insulation.
And are you going to tell us what you find, or is this going to remain a mystery?
It's going to remain a mystery.
Yay! Is it something that can fit in a pocket?
Yes. Happily pocket-sized. So I retrieve it and put it in a pocket.
As you're retrieving it, that hatch does flip back over of and course. Clap shut.
I want to look around to see if I can see the chest that my nana wanted me to get.
Please roll. Read a bad situation.
Okie doke. It is a pretty bad situation. Can I use my special...
Your plus one forward. Yes, gift? You can.
So I just add plus one to
just
the roll.
Just add one to the roll, yeah.
Cool. And yeah, I have plus one sharp, so I've got plus two.
Nice.
Ginny gift, it's a Ginny gift.
Oh, okay, 10. So 12.
So you get three questions off Read a Bad Situation.
Ooh, answer me these questions, three. What's most vulnerable to me?
As you look around, as the trapdoor shuts behind you and as the smoking hole and the fire starts to suck a bit of this green vapour out of the attic, you see rising from the insulation at the far end of the attic, the head of the worm.
Meh.
The head alone is the size of you. What is facing you is a circular maw full of needly inward pointing teeth.
It's not a pretty dragon, is it?
Worm with a Y.
How far away from me is it?
This is a townhouse, so the attic overall is probably like half the length of a bus.
Okay.
Is sort of the whole width of the attic. You're at one end.
Mm-hmm.
It is closer to the middle than the other end,
sure.
but still closer to the other end than you.
The question, what's the best way to protect the victims? Mm-hmm. Can the chest be a victim in this situation?
No.
Oh, okay.
You or your companions or the other civilians in the building
can
be the victims.
Peggy doesn't really care about that. I mean, she cares about herself, I suppose.
Yeah.
So yeah, what's the best way to protect myself?
It's getting ready to breathe. Another cloud of this stuff. You can see the ribbony segments behind the head starting to inflate as it gathers its awful internal juices to breathe out another cloud of this stuff and absolutely flood the attic with it. The best way to protect the victim yourself is to shut that mouth or shut its head in something.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets you thinking about this Rosebriar chest that you've been told to find. This dragon, this worm, was not woven into the house when you lived here. You can tell, like, the discoloration of the walls is very clear to you now, is from its infestation. This is something that got out after the family moved away. And you know that this treasure chest was the last thing that was left here. So I think you probably put two and two together at this point. And think the dragon came out of the chest.
Yes, particularly as Nana was like, don't open it.
Yeah,
it's got a dragon in it.
Right. Is Peggy more into the business side or the magic side of her family's dealings?
Historically, the business side. Mm-hmm. She's not wanted to be involved in the magic side. Okay. But her 20 years of travelling the world, grifting, with the slightly magical knowledge background that she has, meant that she started seeing the bonuses to allowing a bit of magic to happen. So to cut corners with spells, she's got a grimoire that she likes to carry about, and also dealing in antiquities that have magical properties is much more profitable. So she dabbles, but for capitalist reasons.
I think it's more actually the business side and the wheeling and dealing and dealing with people and their wants and their motivations and that kind of thing that makes you kind of realise everything this thing has been doing with keeping people in the house is about, like, possession.
Mm.
It's about possessing things. And you think about a chest, and what you put in a chest is things that you possess.
Mm.
And that maybe there's a contradiction that would take root in this thing's mind if it believes it should possess everything, but then it is put somewhere that characterises it as a possession, that might create a kind, almost a kind of like a loop in its mind that might do something to it.
Mm-hmm. A paradox. Can I see the chest? Where's the bloody chest?
You can't immediately see the chest from where you're standing, so you'll have to take some sort of investigative action to find it.
Right. Can my special ability to see magical influences help here? Because it feels like it's a magical item.
100%. This is the first time we're seeing this happen.
Yeah.
How does Peggy's sight function? What does she do?
Peggy can see magical stuff and spirits just all the time. If they're there, she can see them. Cool. But in the same way that you sort of filter out background noise when you want to listen to someone talking in a loud pub, she has to filter it out because it's everywhere all the time. So she has to kind of like soft focus or like let some peripheral vision in to be able to properly pick up on what's about. So it's just sort of a little brain switch, basically.
Okay. Peggy flips the brain switch.
Mm-hmm.
You've got up here, you've got the thing that you want. Peggy's instinct was get in, get the thing, get out. But she's now thinking that this chest, we really need to deal with this. You're staying up here longer. Take one harm.
Oh, I am perilous on the harms.
You're going to need some help up there.
I'm one away from dying.
And then roll that investigate mystery.
Oh, boy. Okay, and I've got plus one sharp. No. Oh. I've got a six. Or
I know what the consequences are, but do you want to spend luck?
I do want to spend luck, yeah, absolutely. I think it would be rubbish if I have to like set this back again. Yeah, I'm going to spend luck. And when I spend luck, someone from my past will reappear in my life soon.
We love it.
You're welcome.
Loads of people from your past have been cropping up today anyway.
Yeah, true.
We're all back.
What's one more?
Turns out it all goes really well.
Yeah, so you get your question off investigate a mystery.
Brilliant.
I know what you want to know.
What is being concealed here?
Right underneath where its head is.
Oh, for
you see
sake.
Just peeping out of the insulation, the open lid of a treasure chest that, or like a carven wooden chest that does not look big enough to contain this thing, but you're aware that magical artifacts are sometimes not quite what they seem.
The Mary Poppins bag effect.
Exactly. How does it register to your sight? Because this is a magical object.
I think it's got a glow around it in a classic video game come touch me way.
This is the objective.
Yeah.
You clock this glowing chest and the worm deflates again. You know, it was gearing up to breathe and the head moves, it raises to look at you over the remaining green fog and says,
"A tailor! You smell of tailor!"
So thready.
What was happening downstairs again?
Oh man.
They're going for the painted shut door.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, Cal was about to try and get in the door that's painted shut on the second floor.
Let me guess, black magic.
Yeah. Yeah, give me an act under pressure, please.
Act under pressure. Okay.
So you, plus cool, or you can have read about this kind of thing.
Yes. once again, I've read about painted over doors.
You have that good door book.
Yeah. Big book of DIY and door issues. So I can roll plus sharp, which is plus two. So 14.
Whoa!
Jeez.
DIY pro.
That's a good chapter.
Yeah.
Good chapter.
We've got
chapter.
Nick Knowles in the house.
That is a door, all right.
You know what it is? Because this door is painted shut, the worm hasn't been bothering holding it shut. So you're expecting the sort of resistance you've been getting from all these other doors that its body and its muscles are holding against you, and all you're actually pulling against is paint. So the door flies open. You see inside a store cupboard. There are no items in the store cupboard. All there is in the store cupboard is a corpse.
A corpse? A human corpse?
A human corpse of a woman in a business suit, with a little badge clipped to the lapel with the Voop Regeneration logo. She's slumped against the back wall of the store cupboard with her phone at her ear as if she's making a phone call. Eyes dead, staring. Looks like she's probably been dead for weeks. And the phone and the hand are webbed to her face with tiny, sticky, greenish worm filaments.
Hmm. Oh, I don't know if I want to go in there. How big is the store cupboard? Is it
It's literally big enough to contain her, and then there are some shelves above her.
Right, okay. Can I investigate a mystery to try and work out what's going on here?
Before you even roll, actually, because people are sort of running down, lots of things are happening at once, Adrienne comes back up the stairs from the bottom floor looking for help. So the first thing she says is, "We can't get the front door open. The front door's stuck to like all of the other doors. We need as many people as we can to put..." Oh my God, Winona.
That's autocomplete to Ryder. In my head. Oh my God, it's Winona Ryder.
Free Winona.
That's the landlady.
Ah, I was the landlady. I'm terribly sorry for
it always.
What a lovely eulogy.
Also, I love that she's like gagging and Cal's just been there like, "Oh, right."
Oh, you don't want one of those in there. Nick Knowles told me that. Bring the property value down.
There was nothing about this in my book of doors. Yeah.
Where's my book of corpses? Let me just check.
But yes, if you want more information, you can absolutely investigate a mystery.
Investigate a mystery then, I guess. So that is sharp again. So that's 7, 8, 9.
So you get one question off investigate mystery.
What the fuck is this?
Well, I mean, what happened here?
What happened here?
You reckon this worm got free and wanted to possess and hoard and hold all of the people in this building, and you reckon it's been using this body to talk to the tenants.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can't use a phone, and it would be suspicious to all of the humans if they were just being sort of shut in their homes and there was no one they could call.
Mm.
So you think probably as weird things have been happening, they've been phoning the landlady and the worm has been using this, has been puppeting this corpse to fob them off.
Right.
This is its mouthpiece to deal with its possessions.
So it's not effectively a weak spot of the worm then?
No.
No, okay.
You do think, based on this, if it's been And you can actually see, sort of as you're investigating, as you're like hunkering down and looking close at this, she's slumped against the wall, the back wall of the store cupboard. You can see that out of that back wall behind her, there are gaps in the wall that ribbony tendrils of the worm have come through, and they are woven into like into her back, into her side, to effectively like puppeteer her. So this was a thing you hadn't quite realised that the worm was able to do. It's like if somebody's dead and they're near enough a wall, it can use their body.
Right.
And as you're investigating it, she starts to move, still with the hand and the phone webbed to the face, but the other hand starts to flail, sort of jerky zombie movements as she starts to try to get to her feet, still sort of connected to the wall by this worm umbilical.
Cal goes, "Hello!" Stabs her with the flaming sword.
My name's Winona. What's your name?
Roll to kick some ass.
Sorry, I ruined it.
Six.
You're taken off guard. She, with the one free hand, punches you across the face, lands you with a proper, like, jaw-breaking hit. Zero harm, but you drop the sword on the floorboards and the fire starts to spread.
Alright, lovies, it's me, Matt, your compere. I hope you enjoyed Act 4 of Vigil Tailor-Made. There will now be an interval of 2 weeks, after which please be back in your seats for our production finale, Act 5 of 5. Before you head off for interval refreshments, though, a couple of things to point to in the programme. First of all, Dragon Meet is coming up. Dragon Meet is London's annual one-day role-playing game and board game convention. This year it's on the 30th of November. There's no official Merely Roleplayers presence there this year, but I will be there, hanging about. I'll be spending the morning in a mega game of Lovecraft-esque by Black Armada Games. So if you're in that game as well, I'll see you there and maybe we'll go mad together. And even though we're not doing anything, the Podcast Zone is still very much up and running, run by Fiona Howitt of What Am I Rolling and occasionally of This Parish. There'll be the usual podcasters alley of people with stalls and stands telling you all about their show. So if you're looking for new actual plays to get involved with, you'll be able to go and chat to people. Or if you are fans of some of them already and just want to chat to the cast, there'll be a bunch of them around on the mezzanine floor. And there's a packed programme of live shows to head to as well. I'm particularly looking forward to the live prologue of Till Death Do Us Heart, the Rowan Rook and Deckard Heart the City Beneath actual play podcast that's currently running, which I believe was funded as part of one of their crowdfunding campaigns for the upcoming Dagger in the Heart supplement campaign book for that game. That live show will star Naomi Clark of Realms of Peril and Glory and occasionally of This Parish as a hyena woman with hands made of bees who got left at the altar and now needs to head into the heart with hangers-on in tow to find out where the heck her wife went. There's also podcasters and tabletop gaming industry people general industry networking event happening the night before, so the 29th of November, which I'm also planning to head along to. So if you're going to be there, I'll see you there. Another bit of news, if you're listening to this, if you're a longtime Vigil listener, then you're probably into the game Monster of the Week. Maybe you like the sort of stories that you can tell with it. I hope you do. There's some new material coming out for Monster of the Week. Evil Hat, the publishers of the game, are currently crowdfunding two beefy new books
to go with the main game. There's, I think, 9 new Hunter playbooks in there, along with loads of other optional material, playbooks for your team, optional things called Hunter Stories, which just give you generally a bit more backstory and story arcs for your main characters to play along through. So if you're a Monster of the Week player, or just want to support this game and make sure that there's lots more material out there for us and all other Monster of the Week players to use, those two books are currently funding on BackerKit, and I'll leave a link for you in the program notes. Finally, if you're a regular here and you've been around listening to us for a little while, you might remember that there was a period where I was regularly promoting another Monster of the Week podcast called Omen Investigations. You won't have heard that name around here for a while because they disappeared off the air for a little bit, but I have recently discovered that they are back and well into their second season. It's a good jumping on point because it's the beginning of a brand new story. So you can go all the way back to the beginning and listen to their first season, or you can jump in with season 2, some brand new characters. They are another Monster of the Week actual play. They lean rather more surreal and zany than we do here. If we put the emphasis on the drama, I think it's safe to say that Omen Investigations puts the emphasis on the chaos. You'll get a sense of it in the upcoming trailer. Stay tuned after that trailer for the credits and for the epilogue.
Welcome, welcome everyone to the lovely town of Laymouth, a little spot where nothing unusual ever happens, not a thing, just a normal town of normal people. No need to worry about anything strange here, everything is totally fine.
Oh yeah, Laymouth? Yeah, no, it's great here, it's just, you know, sunny skies, seagulls, no monsters. If you hear anything growling at night or seeing strange lights or anything, you know, just completely normal. Maybe fireflies? Yeah, fireflies.
Right, fireflies. Everything's under control. The town isn't teetering on the edge of a magical catastrophe or anything. And those occasional tentacle sightings, purely decorative. Local art project, really. Nothing here to see, folks.
Correct. Nothing to worry about. No anomalies detected. Yet. But if you do happen to see a small tear in reality, don't panic. Just walk in the other direction, quickly, and stay indoors at night for safety, just in case.
Right. So enjoy your time here in Laymouth. It's all very quaint, peaceful, definitely not haunted, sitting on a ley line or overrun by magical creatures. Everything is perfectly fine. That was a seagull. A big, hungry seagull.
Ah, sweet ass! I'll get the net.
Penny, get the big one.
If you're interested in visiting the town of Laymouth-on-Sea, then please check out Omen Investigations, Season 2, wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris McLennan as Ed Kincaid, and Josh Yard as Ginny Greenteeth, with Chris Starkey as Cameron Jarvis.
I'm Matt Boothman, and I play the supporting cast. Editing and sound design by me, and the theme music is by Alexander Pankhurst. We were playing Monster of the Week, a role-playing game by Michael Sands, published by Evil Hat Productions. You can find Monster of the Week at genericgames.co.nz. Merely Role Players is a Foggy Outline production in association with Blackshaw Theatre Company. Until next time, if drama be the food of life, play on.
One evening, a poor traveller travels through the woods and stops by the cottage, knocking on the door as the night is drawing in.
I open the door slightly, sort of look through the crack in the door and have shotgun out of sight, just in case.
You see a stooped figure in a ragged cloak thrown over his head. I've been travelling long. Would there be any chance of a warm bed and some soup or porridge for a poor traveller on a dark night?
Hold that thought, and I close the door in his face. Clarissa, this is fairy tale world, right?
Yes.
Now, if I'm in my fairy tales, if a wretched, bent-over, awful-looking person in a cloak thing asks for help, you either definitely give it to them because they're a gorgeous fairy princess, or you definitely don't give it to them because they're an awful witch. Which one do I do here?
First of all, I'm very pleased that you've been taking in some of the lore that I've been imparting. It's good to...
I've seen Beauty and the Beast, and I've seen Snow White.
Well, it's better than those super being films that you've that your head is mostly filled with. Much more useful. And you are correct. It is highly unlikely in this place that this visitor is who they seem to be.
Shall I ask if they've got any red apples or any roses?
You could ask if they bring anything for the table, certainly. I believe there is probably more risk in showing...
disrespect.
In turning a stranger away who asks for help than there is in inviting them in.
I agree. Just, hey, that's a really good conversation. You're really coming out of yourself.
I'm making the best of the situation.
Stop sighing. Okay, good. Remember, stiff up a lip. Keep your chin up.
You sound like my father.
Well, he sounds like a very sensible... Right, I go back to the door. Hello.
Alms for the poor. If you cannot offer me a bed, then perhaps simply something to send me on my way.
Yes. Well, no, you're not an awful, evil witch, are you?
I'm sorry?
I'm just covering. This is fairy tale land, man. I'm not from here. And I've seen Disney films. You're welcome to have some soup. We've got loads of soup. And I can cook you a ribeye steak.
They say in the village that a witch resides here. Would you not know one if you saw one?
Well, she's complicated.
I will have that soup, thank you. I would like to accept your offer of soup. I am very hungry and cold.
Sure. You're not going to kill us though, are you? Have you got any red apples?
Sadly, no.
Roses?
No.
Right, in you come.
The traveller enters the cottage, takes a seat by the soup pot.
I give her he or she.
Seems to be a he.
I give him a bowl of soup and a big bit of crusty bread. Traveller, how good are your teeth? Could you gnaw through a bit of steak?
Yes. Your generosity is so appreciated. Thank you.
Sure. How do you like it cooked? I'm getting quite good at this now. Do you like it pink in the middle?
Yes. Pink. Yes, soft and pink. Very nice.
Slightly creepy, but yeah, okay, sure. That's how we'll go for it. And I start cooking a steak.
What a wonderful cottage you have. What a wonderful household you keep here, sir.
Thanks, yeah. I'd like to keep order, nice and tidy.
So incredibly tidy. How do you keep all the dust off everything? It's incredible.
6 hours a day it takes. Well, I think they're ours. The little flies seem to fly around the room and they die after 6 hours. Well, I don't know.
I thank you for your hospitality, and I will bother you no longer than I must to continue my journey. But I must simply say that if I believe if many had what you have here, such a wonderful home, such delicious food, a wonderful wife.
No.
I've misunderstood. I'm sorry. But still, what a wonderful household, peaceful. What could anyone want for more?
Well, it'd be nice to see, you know, friends again. Because we're not from here. This isn't where we're from, you know.
Oh, you're not... This is not your father's cottage and your father's cottage before him.
I assume I'm still wearing my bike leathers.
Up to you. You could be still wearing your bike leathers or the...
I guess they're hanging up. They're hanging up.
Yeah, the hunters have been bringing like homespun stuff, so you could be in fantasy garb.
So yeah, I've got my guns and my bike leathers to one side, and I say, well, I normally wear this. It's not your usual... Yeah, maybe we're not... We're out of towners.
Oh, well, then... All the better for you that you have found and made for yourselves such a wonderful home. 'Twere mine, I would never leave it.
Do you want it? Do you want to stay with us?
It starts to tear up. Such hospitality is rare in these lands, truly.
Well, if you can get us back to where we come from... You are more than welcome to this place.
Why would you want to leave such an idyll? Friends, you say? Do your friends not visit you here?
They don't know that we're here. We don't know where we are. We don't know how to get out of here. And no is the answer to that question.
You reside, sir, in the forest of Albion. I can tell you this much.
Right, we knew that, actually.
If 'twere possible... to see the faces of these friends again.
Yeah.
Would you?
Do you mean in, like, real life? Not just see them in, like, a magical mirror?
You spoke of leaving this place to get to where they are.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you could bring them here, where all is peaceful and safe, you would have everything then, would you not? Everything you could possibly want.
Yeah, but that's not my choice to make, is it? They've got their own lives, you know. I can't just be demanding them to come here. Although it'd be nice to see them, but I couldn't lock them in here with me. That's not right.
Perhaps you couldn't. You may be right about that. But you're wrong that it's not your choice to make.
Who? Right, I start sidling over towards the guns. Clarissa, maybe get away from the table.
I know that voice. You've offered me the warmth of your hearth, a share of your soup. You've even offered me your very home itself. This is a generous offer indeed, and I am willing to make a generous one in return.
Yeah.
Throws off the travelling cloak and is still a pretty unimpressive, shabby specimen underneath. But as soon as the cloak is off and the man's face is visible, Clarissa is on her feet yelling, "You! You're the reason! You offered us sanctuary in your kingdom, and now half my soul is gone!"
Clarissa, who is this guy?
She dips a very mocking, formal curtsy.
"Sir Hunter, we find ourselves in the honoured presence of the King of Fairyland."
Motherfucker. I start shrugging on my bike leathers, loading the shotgun.
Wait. Why the hurry? Why the hurry to go anywhere? You've got everything you could need here except... the people that you care about, and I am offering you a chance to just bring them all here with you. Can you afford to give that up?
Yes.
Because let me tell you, there's no way you're getting out of here under your own steam. So if you want to see him again, this is your best bet. Come on. You can trust old Nick.
Right. You see, Monster Rule 101 is when... Actually, anyone, Rule 101. When they say, come on, you can trust old... Insert creepy inflected name here. It instantly makes me want to shoot them in the face. So, old Nick, I'm going to give you a choice. You can leave our house, never darken this doorstep again, or I'll throw you out.
It's dangerous in this land, boy, to rescind hospitality once offered, especially to a king.
It's dangerous to stay here with me.
The smoke from the cook fire seems to fill the cottage. Clarissa is making movements with one hand and mumbling words under her breath. You're reaching for the weapons on the wall. Throws his hands up. Don't say I didn't make the offer. When it comes to it, it's all I could have done. I tried. Starts moving for the exit.
I follow from a distance to make sure he definitely leaves the glade. And I close the door when I see him cross the threshold, across the mushroom patch. Explain.
That man usurped the throne of Fairyland from King Oberon and, I believe, has some design that I cannot see the full shape of. I had an arrangement with Oberon. That man offered to continue it, offered me the hospitality of his realm, and then while in his realm, while under his protection, I lost everything.
So he wanted the emission effect. He wanted the protection that you could offer.
He backed our project, yes.
Did I just threaten one of the most powerful beings in the entire universe thing that we live in?
Have you never heard the name Old Nick?
It's not Father Christmas, is it? You didn't look like Father Christmas. You're laughing maniacally.
You could perhaps not be farther from the truth, although the red colour scheme, known as Old Nick by some, Old Scratch by some, you just threw the devil out of our cottage.
Fuck my life.
What does you attempting magic to get this door unbarred look like? Ridiculous.
Yeah. Really overwrought. Yeah.
Please give us a description that would specifically piss off Ed Kincaid.
He's yeah. just looking at you.
So,
I love your refusal to just try the door.
Yeah. Well, they said it was stuck.
Black magic.
Yeah.
Foggy outline. Undivide your world.